This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan. 24-year-old Kushalini Mahendran from the DAP is one of the youngest councillors of the Petaling Jaya City Council, MBPJ. Kusha, who comes from incredibly humble beginnings, is a social democrat who's passionate about expanding the common good, be it public healthcare, public transportation, or public schools, and redistributing wealth to the common folk. On today's episode, I'm joined by Kushalini to discuss her journey in politics, what she plans to do as a local councillor, and her vision for a better Malaysia. As always, Beyond the Ballot Box is available as a podcast. You can find us on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Kusha, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
When did your journey in politics begin?
So my journey in politics began right after the Sheraton move, right after COVID, when I joined for an internship in DAP Petaling Jaya under Rajiv Arun Bukit Gasing. Initially, when I started the internship, I had no intention to, have a career pivot from my actuarial science degree into politics. But it was a conversation with Rajiv when we were talking, and he was talking about how, working within the system is just as important as, keeping the government accountable and pushing the government for reforms, because who's going to do the work within? And I think that conversation inspired me in a way that if I work within the political system, I will have the power to take action and do the right things working within the system.
Was interning at DAP something you already wanted to do or had at the back of your mind? Or was Lanka Sheraton something that ignited something in you?
Actually, the fire in me awoke in 2013.
Okay.
I don't know how many of you guys remember, but there was a blackout. Without going into much details, there was a huge expectation that the government was going to be changed. But the government was not changed, and I felt so let down by the system, because at that time I was only 14 years old, 15 years old, I thought if the government changed, I would have a better opportunity in receiving scholarships, I would have a better opportunity in getting enrolled in a good university to continue my degree. And when that hope fell, it felt to me like, oh my goodness, how many other millions of people are in the same shoes as me, hoping for a change just so we have some amount of opportunities to move forward in life? And so what am I going to do about it? Yes, I can whine that nobody's doing anything about it, but what am I going to do about it? That's when the fire really woke, when I was 14 years old, and wow. I had a very inspiring history teacher, Mr. Ramesh, who was part of FINDRAF at that time.
So when you decided that, okay, now I want to join a political party, why was that political party DAP?
Let's get one fact out of the room. There is no perfect political party in the world. I'm not saying in Malaysia. I'm saying in the world. No political party is perfect. A political party is an organization of hundreds of thousands of people. People are imperfect. People are different and imperfect. But they come together for a shared purpose. And they come together for a shared reason. And the reason that people came together in the DAP is very simple. Freedom, justice, solidarity. Freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of action, freedom of holding the government accountable. Solidarity, when a certain group of people are marginalized, we should stand together with them, whether it is us who's being affected or not. And justice, upholding fairness, upholding decisions that are fair. Fair is not equality. Fair is equity.
Why join a political party as opposed to, let's say, civil society, an NGO perhaps?
The way I look at nation building is that it's an ecosystem of three players. There's the civil service, which is a major player that we cannot not consider it in this conversation. And there's the politicians, the political circle, and there's the NGOs who hold the government accountable, no matter who's the civil service and who is in government. Who's the government of the day? They should hold the government equally as accountable at all times, no matter who is in power. And all these three players are very important for the ecosystem. It's very important that the civil service remains and, gets its training and becomes better and better as they progress in their civil service ladder. It is also important that good people join politics, because these people will become ministers, these people will become your adun, these people will become your councillors. And it is important that we also put enough effort to attract talent and people with the heart in the right place to the political parties. And it is also important that the NGOs hold the government accountable at all times. So in this ecosystem, the role that I felt was most natural for me to play was to be the change maker, because of the natural tendency for me to take action and wanting to do something.
Right.
And so that's why I'm in DAP.
So tell me about your family. What were your parents like? Where did you grow up? Was your parents political? Did you, you know, growing up, when you all were sitting around the dinner table, did you all have conversations about politics, social justice? I'm wondering, what was your childhood like in that regard?
I was born in KL, and then I lived in KL for 6 years before moving to Ipoh because my father had a job transfer. And my father was transferring as a head of department of a retail store. So in KL, he was working as a sales assistant, and then he got a promotion to move over as a HOD, and we moved to Ipoh because of that reason. Actually, I remember my parents being very specific with the area that they picked we lived in because we could not afford transport to go to school. So, you know, the school had to be walking distance. So I went to SK Tasisian Convent and then SMK Tasisian Convent, which was a 6-minute walking distance from my house. And, you know, my mother would walk me every day to school, and once in a while, when my father's around, he will also drop me off. But after we moved to Ipoh and we found the perfect place to live, my father actually got a transfer and he had to move back to the Klang Valley. So my family stayed back in Ipoh, and it was just my mother, me and my sister, three of us. And it was quite scary because in some ways it felt like, you know, we only had each other, and even if something happened, you know, it is not easy to think that three women can live in the house with two younger children who grew up to become teenagers. To think that we had conversations at a dinner table, there was not really a dinner table to have a conversation in, you know. Indian families, we eat, we sit, we watch TV while eating.
Right.
That's what we do. So, you know.
Yes, watching TV while eating, that sounds a lot like my family.
Yeah. So it was not like, oh, this is dinner time, this is family time. In fact, my parents worked so hard, my mother worked so hard in making sure that all that me and my sister needed to do was to focus on our education. And that privilege that my mother and my father gave me is... I am everything I am today because they prioritize my education and they prioritize me. But I know that many other families don't have this privilege because, you know, you have to go out, you have to make the ends meet, you have to, even if you work for a daily wage, you have to bring something to the table to put food on the table. And so my mother worked very hard for that, and so did my father. She's a housewife, but I will not dismiss her hard work in raising us.
Raising children is probably one of the hardest jobs there
are. And imagine when you have a daughter like me, you know.
how did your background shape your political views, Kusha?
In everything that I felt something was wrong, or I felt like, hey, that should change, that's not fair, I felt that in the end, the decision maker was never really connected to the problem. If the decision maker saw the problem, they would have enough intelligent capacity to fix the problem. But when you cannot relate to a problem, you don't care. And when you don't care, you won't put that emotional energy. Everybody has 24 hours in a day, right? You can't spend an emotional energy on something that you don't really care, because as politicians, you have 100 things going on. I'm telling you this as a girl in politics. So, which is why we need a wide range of representation, so different people care about different issues and things don't get left behind. You know, we always look at Malaysian politics evolvement in a race perspective, a race lens. But if you look at it, in the last 60 years of government, before the government was changed in 2018, people who held the high government positions, people who were ministers, are people who have had generational wealth, people who are connected to the elites, people who have already, you know, secured their position in this upper echelon, and they, you know, move and friend each other in this upper echelon. And I think 2018, when people, like, for example, when Anthony Loke becomes the Minister of Transport and he insists that we need to have a functional bill and we need to make sure that we maintain our public transport, is because he understands. He knows that regular people like us take the train to work. So many people do. And it's important that these trains are not 15 minutes late. We are rushing to go to work.
Absolutely.
You know? And we don't view it from that lens, that how that 60 years of elite power control would have already damaged our structural system. See, as opposition, you can only have so much insight to the government. But once you've been in government for 5 years, you will realize, oh, why is this rule like this? And why is that rule like this? And why didn't you think of A, B, and C when you made this rule? It's because I didn't know to think of A, B, and C. Which is all the more reason that we need people from various different backgrounds to represent us.
So, you know, how did, you know, your political awakening when you were 14 then propel you to take politics even more seriously and then join a political party? How did that journey come about?
To be honest, I always kind of knew that I was a person who wants to fight the injustice. I never knew how. I never knew exactly what was going to be the way. But at the same time, actually, I remember having a conversation with my father, and I was like, oh my God, what if I join politics, you know? This was like much later, not when I was 14, but much later, when I was doing my degree in actuarial science. And he was like, you should still finish your degree. You shouldn't like leave your degree hanging halfway because you need a safety net to fall back from. And he reminded me, he was like, Appa's not a businessman. I can't bankroll your political expense.
Right.
And the awakening at 14 was a stark realization that so much of inequality can be solved if everybody has the equal opportunity to succeed. And that awakening felt like the most meaningful path that I can move forward is to, you know, join the power system. But I also didn't realize that until during my internship. When I saw the difference Rajiv made, just as a backbencher Adun. Yeah, he's a backbencher Adun. But at the same time, we have advocated for national level policy making. We have made the Pakatan Harapan manifesto together. We made the Selangor Harapan BN manifesto together. These are things that we will hold the government accountable for. When we make the manifesto and we promise people that these are what we're going to do, we will hold them accountable for it and be like, hey, we promised this, you know, your administration has to deliver the X amount of things. And that was very inspiring to me. If I can consensus build among the Pakatan Harapan leaders that these are the five items that we are going to agree on, it is a very powerful tool to make sure that this is what the government does for the next 5 years, compared to, you know, only picking, cherry picking issues instead of having a bigger picture view of what's going on in our politics.
So I understand that you were studying actuarial science during your university time. Were you already with DAP at the time?
Yes, I joined in the last year of my degree. So my internship was before the last year of my degree.
Right.
It was a sem break between the second year and the third year. So during the last year of my degree, I actually was working part-time for Rajiv as his political secretary. And it was like a 10-hour a week thing, you know, it was a very tiny wage, but it was more like getting my foot in the door to see like, what do I want to keep doing after this? And Rajiv was a strong advocate. He's like, you know, I think you have what it takes. Your heart is in the right place. And if good people shy away from politics because they are scared, then who will take their place?
You grew through the ranks of DAP, you became the youth chief of PJDAP, and now you are a local councillor. What exactly does a local councillor do? What is your job and what are your powers and limitations?
Okay, so when you think of a local council, right? So let's talk about MPPJ since I'm from MPPJ. Mm-hmm. The local council is governed by a board and the mayor is like the chairman of the board. And there are 24 councillors in each local council, and Selangor has 12 local councils. So these 24 councillors and one mayor make the board. So this board has much smaller committees. Mm-hmm. So I sit on the town planning committee. There are other committees also within the MPPJ system. And these committees make decisions. These committees make about 100 decisions a year on different various initiatives that MPPJ is going to embark on. So, for example, now that I'm part of the town planning committee, we have to relook our transport master plan when we were actually the first people to have a transport master plan in 2014, which was Rajiv's effort. And I'm continuing on his legacy by relooking our transport because the travel patterns have changed in PJ. Development in KL and Puchong is affecting traffic in PJ as well. So we need a holistic view of all the entry points of PJ, where is our pressure points and how do we bring the MRT in a way that makes sense and will relieve traffic pressure towards PJ. So we will also be doing that. So see, the position of a local councillor, yes, you can always call your councillor when your drain is broken. You can always call your councillor when the road is not repaired. But it has so much more depth than that. As board members of the council, when you sit in these different committees, the council is, you are shaping, you are part of shaping. You're not the only person shaping the council direction. So each committee has about 12 councillors and it's chaired either by the Timbalan Dato' Bandar, the deputy mayor, or chaired by the mayor. And these committees' decisions, you can partake in them. So you can give your views, you can explain why, you can persuade your 12 other people to make a committee decision. So nothing is made, no decision in MPPJ is made singularly. Every decision is made by this 1 plus 12 councillors. And so it is a very important role.
It is exceptionally important. And there was a point in Malaysian history where we had local government elections. And then that changed. And for decades and decades, we did not. And basically right now, local councillors are appointed by the political parties themselves. You yourself got appointed. But one thing civil society has been pushing for, and DAP as a political party has also been pushing for, is for local government elections. What are your thoughts on local government elections? Is it important?
We should absolutely have them. I have always thought local government elections are important, but my last 2 months in MPPJ is testament of how important that the person who's sitting in all these meetings are representing the people of PJ. They should be, you know, understanding the pulse, understanding what PJ wants and what PJ needs. Because policy making is not only about what people want. Then you will fail absolutely. It's also about what the city needs as it's growing. And for example, if you're moving towards an aging population, how do we move MPPJ in the direction to make sure that we serve our aging population well? How to make sure that all our commercial areas are senior citizen and disabled friendly. All of this, the level of importance in your seat in MPPJ is very, very high. And of course, we need local council elections. This is not about today. Yes, today I'm appointed by DAP and I will serve to my level best to show that I deserve an opportunity to serve the people in the future too. It is also for my career progression that I do well. I have a stake in the PJ that we build because I choose to live there. But at the same time, what if in the next 50 years, you know, the political climate has changed. Everything has changed. Democracy is very messy. And people should always have the right to choose their local representative because the stake at the decisions we make affect the next 50 to 100 years, not just the next 5 to 10 years. Shouldn't people be able to hold their councillors accountable? So, for example, when I was appointed into MPPJ, Rajiv, I and all the other councillors who was appointed by Rajiv and the state government sat down and drew up what is it we want to do for PJ and what is our shared vision. People who don't naturally do this together, how do you hold them accountable? Don't you want to know what your councillor wants to do, things to do? What is your councillor's opinion on development? What's your councillor's opinion on transport? You should want to know what is the policy direction of every candidate that is in MPPJ. And it is so much more than a political party appointing a person. It is also, it's just like a dun seat, right? If by that logic, then you know you can just choose the MP and then the political party can appoint the aduns. But it's a level of government. We have three levels of governments in Malaysia: the local government, the state government, and the federal government. And right now, we have no representation in the local government from the people. Why should you let the power be concentrated to the political parties?
On the show with me today is Kushalini Mahendran, Petaling Jaya Councilwoman. We will continue our conversation after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan, and on the show with me today is Kushalini Mahendran, Petaling Jaya Councilwoman. This conversation will also be available as podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you're listening to this on Spotify, do give us a follow, drop us a review. It would be really, really helpful. So, Kusha, you consider yourself a social democrat, which is a left-wing ideology. What does social democracy mean to you?
It means to me three things: solidarity, freedom, and justice. For me, social democracy is about creating a society where everyone has the opportunity to thrive. So we were talking about equal opportunities, but it's not about the elites having more opportunity. It's not about giving the B40 an unfair amount of opportunity. It's about leveling the playing field. For example, our public education system. It should be the reason that we uplift people from the B40 community to move into the M40 and the M40 to move into the T20. It's a gradual progression. People need to keep moving up the social rung. And social democracy does not mean that, you know, it should go by merit, for example. It doesn't mean that if you have 10 A's from SPM, you need to be getting into the university, because we need to check your privilege. Why do you have 10 A's? Is it because you had 10 tuitions? Why did you have 5 A's? Is it because you had 5 B's because you were helping your father at the hawker stall at night? It's also about taking into account the whole bigger picture, the economic background of a person and what they can do despite having all the different drawbacks that they have in life. And so to me, that is what social democracy is. It's solidarity with everybody or anybody who is facing any marginalization. It is justice. It's upholding fairness through equity and not equality. And it is freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom to hold your government accountable.
As a social democrat, what do you think one of the key problems within Malaysian politics or political economy is right now?
Taxation.
What do you mean by that?
As a history, we are a country that has normalized the culture of giving people cash handout and subsidy. See, as a social democrat, I'm not against welfare systems. Welfare systems and a strong safety net is so important to make sure that when suddenly someone gets a cancer, their whole financial plan is like derailed. Can they bounce back up? Does the government have enough social safety net for something when someone meets an unexpected life situation to bounce back up? But at the same time, that is the end goal. Someone should bounce back up. But we never ever took into account that in the last 60 years of the government. Because, you know, elite politicians don't see the need why our society needs to graduate. So when someone's on the welfare system, what's their 10-year plan? Do they keep getting welfare for the next of the 50 years of their life? How do we find them meaningful ways to contribute to the country's economy? This should be the basis of what social democracy is. And if we are going to create a public healthcare system, a public education system of high quality, of high standard, that can help people from various backgrounds, their B40, the M40, to continue to be given the level playing field, the opportunity, we need taxes. But right now, in this political economy, no prime minister will increase taxes. No prime minister will be like, yes, we need to increase taxes, it's the right thing to do. No one will do it because we're also facing inflation. The ringgit is at its lowest. How do you tell people who are already struggling to make ends meet that we're going to increase taxation? And that's why we need progressive taxation system. We need to tax the people who are making and benefiting to level the playing field between people who are struggling and suffering. Solidarity. We are in this together. We are moving forward as a nation together. No one group should benefit over the other.
So I'm a big fan of progressive taxation. I think we need loads more of it. But I'm not talking about necessarily increasing income tax. I'm talking about, you know, things like wealth tax on billionaires, inheritance tax, corporate taxes, etc. And you know what? Malaysian politicians, from Harapan especially, you know, they tend to campaign on these things, right? Going after the maha kaya narratives. But once they are in power, the story kind of changes, at least policy-wise. What do you think of that?
The reality is, okay, let's all be honest. We're not Denmark, where we have established with all our investors that you can, you know, this is our tax system. This is what we're going to do. Invest in our country if you like it, and don't invest if you like it. Right now, we are like trying to chase as many FDIs as we can get, because the stronger there is a demand for the ringgit, the more our ringgit value will rise. But in this state where investors over, this is not investors from Malaysia investing in Malaysia. This is about investors from China. This is about investors from all over the world looking at Malaysia, a small country. If suddenly we come up with a progressive tax system without going through a rigorous study of how exactly we're going to do it, who exactly it's going to affect, which income brackets will it change, people will think that we're being rash, investors will shy away, and our ringgit will continue to slide over the next 2 years if we cannot attract sufficient amount of investment. So I think this is a reality that we cannot discount, that our Minister of Finance too will face, our Minister of Finance will face. But it's not about, oh, this is a difficulty, so we cannot do anything about it. It's about how do we work around it. So what's our next 5 to 10 year plan? If we need to communicate to the investors, tell them, in 10 years, Malaysia is going to have X amount of tax system. In 5 years, this is what we're going to do. We can increase our tax system and we can promote progressive taxes without just doing it overnight. This is our country and we have a stake in it together, and we need a vision of what's going to happen in the next 20 years. How will these taxes, how will our reducing our petrol subsidies and eventually, you know, moving out from it, how will it affect the public transport in all our major cities? Not just the Klang Valley. What about, you know, Johor Bahru and Ipoh?
I also want to talk about something that is really unfortunate about Malaysian politics, but that has been our politics for the longest of time. It's getting worse, and that is the highly racialized nature. And from my vantage point, it is not just PAS and the so-called green wave that many people on this side of the political aisle, they like to push blame. And they say, you know, the so-called racist ones are all PAS, you know, extreme form of Islam and so on and so forth. But even Pakatan Harapan tends to play racial politics. And even Pakatan Harapan supporters, many of them are racist. How do you contend with the racialized nature of Malaysian politics? How do you see it?
I think that, you know, it has been in the advantage of our past leaders who have stirred up our racial sentiments. And it has been in their advantage, because as long as the Malay and Chinese are divided, why talk about progressing in the future? Why talk about how we're going to stabilize the economy? Just talk about protecting Malay and Chinese rights. Then, you know, you'll get the votes. But where does Malaysia go when that keeps happening, right? And the highly racialized nature, we need to change the narrative. When we look back at the last 60 years, like I say, we always look at it in the racial lens. UMNO has been in power, for example. It's a thing people say. But what we don't realize is the power is beyond race. Actually, all these people who are racist, which I acknowledge, yes, across the political divide, there are racist people. There are racist supporters across both sides of the divides. If not, the divides won't exist.
What do you think Harapan needs to do better? Pakatan Harapan gets about maybe 15 to 20% at a national level of Malay support. And it's the opposite for Perikatan Nasional, where they are getting maybe 5% of the non-Malay support.
When we think about winning Malay support, I think this is a flawed frame. What I think we need to be campaigning for is a competent government, a good government, a government that has everybody's interests at stake. And so what do people of the Klang Valley want? What do people of the Selangor want? What do people of Malaysia want? Not what Malay people of Malaysia want. Yes, race-based solutions are very important, okay? Because different races go through different things and they have different amount of limitations and setbacks. But what I like to say is, actually what Rajiv would like to say is, Indian problems, Malaysian solutions. Malay problems, Malaysian solutions. And Chinese problems, Malaysian solutions. And until we can advocate for Malaysian solutions, how are we going to progress together as a society? The plan needs to be different for every race because we go through different things, we understand things differently, and we all live in a bubble. We are the English-speaking bubble, there is a Chinese-speaking bubble, there is a Tamil-speaking bubble, and actually the English-speaking bubble is the smallest bubble. How do we keep having conversations in all these different bubbles and advocating for a Malaysian solution?
So, one thing I have to ask is that DAP presents itself as a multiracial, multi-religious party. I think from a philosophical perspective, from a principle perspective, that is the case, right? There's no, you know, anybody can join DAP. It is open to all Malaysians. But the makeup of the party in reality, as far as I'm aware, is still skewed incredibly heavily towards the Chinese. Why is this the case? And what needs to be done from a party perspective to change this so that the makeup of DAP resembles the principles that DAP champions?
I think that's a wonderful question. Yes, I will acknowledge that DAP is majority Chinese. But we have to also remember like how DAP was formed. DAP was fighting the power, the then UMNO Barisan Nasional, and they were fighting for justice. We consume our own media in our own bubble. So if we're English-speaking, we'll consume English media. When we're Chinese-speaking, we'll consume Chinese media. And so when Chinese leaders speak against the government, the UMNO Barisan Nasional media is not going to cover and tell people this is what DAP champions. What they will say is DAP is being a racist. DAP is being this. That's not true. We are fighting for this. The three principles I told you, freedom, solidarity and justice. What I think DAP needs to do is we need to go and set up our service centres in all the black seats. Let's start with Selangor. What about the seats that we lost to PN in Selangor? Our northern seats, let's go and sit there back. Our southern seats, the seats that we have lost, the parliament seats, let's open a service centre. But we open a service centre with the name of help, with the name of the DAP, the name of the rocket. And the service centre will help people. So for example, if you need a government help, you need whatever you need is, you go to the DAP office. Just like how it happens in Bukit Gasing, we have a DAP office. People walk into our office for various amount of problems, everything under the sun. The one thing that I take pride of in being with DAP is that we can do the work. We solve the problems, we update our residents, we tell them, okay, this is solved, this complaint is solved. People are having problems. And when somebody helps them in the time of their problem, it will show that the true value of the party is to serve the people. And through that, we will also attract the same type of talent from that place. So for example, if we set up a seat in Kuala Selangor, we will attract the talent that believes in the principle of DAP. Yes, we should help people. Yes, we should help them. How can the government do this? We need to change that. Oh, this is a bad policy. This is terrible. And this is what I mean by Malaysian solutions. It's not about a singular race solution. It's about how do we show them that the DAP can do the work, is here to do the work, and will form a competent government if given the chance.
Since the time you joined, have you noticed a change that more young people are joining DAP perhaps, maybe people of diverse backgrounds?
Definitely. For example, in Depsi Selangor, we also have Saudara Kamarul, who's, you know, Malay from a kampung. He's right now a councillor in Subang Jaya. He takes care of the kampung Subang Melayu, I think. He is a person who joined DAP because he believed that we should serve the people. And he's doing an excellent job as a councillor and serving the party too. And so not only young progressive people are joining the party is giving young progressive people the opportunity to serve. And I think nothing is testament to action, right? So when a party puts the people who have these idealistic views of the world, young people who have recently joined the party with an imagination of what Malaysia should be, giving them the platform to serve, teaching them about government, starting from the lowest level of the government. For example, even Stephen Sim started at the lowest level of the government.
When we look at a lot of successful social democratic projects on nation across the world, there is a very strong element of class consciousness among the masses. If we look at social democratic, like the ones that are considered successes today, usually people will look to Scandinavian countries, Sweden, your Denmarks and all of that, right? And in many of those countries, when you look at the unionization rate, it's up to 60, 65, 70, 75% of the workforce is unionized. That means they are arranged politically across class, right? Rather than across race or religion. Whereas when you look at Malaysia, our unionization rate is at a very low 5 to 6% right now. People don't talk about class politics as much. How do we build social democracy? Or what do we do to get the class consciousness up?
I think we need to prioritize voices from different classes. I think oftentimes, maybe even in Malaysia especially, when you come from a different class or you come from a not so well-to-do, you know, you let the wealthy person talk. You let the person who have had the money talk. And I think projecting these voices is very important. But most importantly, grassroots mobilization is key. So we need to identify what is our shared purpose. What is social democracy going to be and what does it mean? For me, it means a quality public education system, a great public healthcare system. Everybody needs, and everybody having a good social safety net. This is the three things that it means to me. And so mobilizing the grassroots to agree that these are the three things we are going to be fighting for as a socially democratic party is very important.
One thing I think PAS, I think many parties, all the parties in Malaysia can learn from is that PAS people on this side of the political aisle may not necessarily agree with their political ideology, especially if you're non-Muslim, but we cannot deny the grassroots support, the kind of programs they have right from the surau level, from tadika level. When I did, when I went to Kelantan and Terengganu last year for the East is Green series I was doing with my colleagues, you know, sometimes you would get an e-hailing, we'll call a cab or something, get into it, and the driver would just be like, I'm a PAS member. Oh, that person's my leader. You know, and these are just random people. Yeah. But, you know, when you go down the street in PJ, even though people support the party, you don't get to see that kind of grassroots where right until the smallest community family level, there is sort of the DAP there, you know, where you get into a random cab and they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, this DAP member is my leader. You don't see that.
I think building a strong grassroots also requires political financing. So yes, I will give PAS the credit that they have a strong grassroots. But you know, until we have a political financing act, we also don't know how much of money they are pouring into that. Whereas the DAP has been a party that we have strong grassroots actually. You know, a lot of our Ketua Kampungs are DAP members, but For the 60 years of their life that they've been DAP members, they have been scared to call themselves DAP members. People who are DAP members are not proudly saying, see, like I am proudly saying, I'm the DAP Petaling Jaya youth chief. But other people feel like, oh, this may affect their job, this may affect this may affect that. Joining a political party in the English-speaking society is one of the hardest things. In fact, are you part of a political party?
First of all, I'm conflicted because I'm a journalist, right? And I think it's important that I maintain some neutrality, at least in a formal sense. I'm interviewing political people from political parties and all of that. But honestly, I would definitely join a political party in a heartbeat if I wasn't a journalist, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing right now.
But so many other people, yes. You would concur with me in the English-speaking bubble. They underestimate the importance of joining a political party, having a vote in the CEC, having a vote in the state committee, and voting your leaders in. But actually, DAP does have a strong amount of grassroots in Selangor. Who do you think puts up our flags and all of that? It's not a paid thing. Volunteers come out and put out our flags. People who are DAP members come out and put out our flags. But we don't say it with pride because the government has scared us in the past for being part of DAP. Until today, now DAP is in government. And the other day I was talking to my friend Lalita and, you know, I was telling her, yeah, come join the DAP, you know, be part of this thing that we are trying to do. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. She thought it's a great idea. 2 days later, she came back and she told me and she's like, oh, you know, my parents think that's a bad idea, especially because I want to have a career. So when you have this, even if they are DAP members, they're not going to tell people that they are DAP members. The indoctrination for the last 60 years, you know, it takes time to come out of it. It takes time to reach a point where you can be part of any political party without people judging you.
So I guess another question on that same note, right? Another thing I realized, this doesn't extend to everyone, but a lot of times when I engage with PAS supporters, I'm not talking about the general voters who I'm not voting for, I'm anti-Barisan, but, you know, I'm just going to vote for whatever option I think is best. I'm thinking about the core. And PAS, I think they have really grown their core over the years in that the people who vote for them believe in the ideology. that past carries, right? This is our ideology. And, you know, I'm going to vote for this person, whether I think they're going to win or they're going to lose or they're going to get trashed, because whether in my lifetime it gets achieved or whether it's my grandchildren's lifetime, this is the, I believe in what past is carrying. I don't see the same from the Harappan side, right? And it's not just about DAP, where from the Harappan side, it's not that people truly, like, you know, I vote for this because this particular ideology that Harappan is carrying is something that I, you know, believe in. It is more like, you know, okay, like, I don't really like this party. Okay, I'm just going to vote for the other one. And then, of course, as Harappan became more popular, and then more and more people started to vote for them. It doesn't feel like, because I feel a lot of Harappan supporters are anti-democratic and they are racist, despite Harappan saying they are multicultural democracy, a democracy-based party, right? How do you see that?
Okay, I think for PAS to have, you know, grown its support, it has not had a counter-narrative. PAS has equated its support to PAS as a support to Islam. And so what I think PAS has done is very unhealthy. Equating a religion to a political party is not the same thing. You know, Islam is a beautiful religion and anybody can uphold Islam as their major principle and fight. But what PAS has done is very unhealthy. And what PAS has done has stirred up our racial politics and divided us to this point. How do we move forward? What is our ideology that we give people to hold on to? Mm-hmm. So we had a few. We had good government, we had good governance, and we also had a Malaysia where everybody is, regardless of race and religion, having the equal opportunity to move forward. But do our actions live up to the things we say and fight for? Because PAS's action does live up to the things that they say and fight for.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's my point, right? Because we can argue whether mixing politics and religion is a good thing in the way PAS is doing it, right? But the point is politics about ideas in heads. PAS has, they knows what they want to achieve. For the most part, they operate within whatever is democratic, right? They are spreading propaganda the way all political parties spread propaganda. We may not like it. We may think it's toxic. We may think it's unhealthy. But they are doing it within that. And so the question is more about the Harappan's ideology, right? And not everybody in Pakatan Harappan is a leftist.
Yes, I mean,
you have some social democrats. You have a tiny few socialists. But you also have liberal democrats, neoliberals, Muslim democrats, Christian interest groups, etc., right? The shared principles of Pakatan Harappan wasn't necessarily a specific socioeconomic ideology, but it was anti-corruption, anti-Barisan Nasional, good governance, and the expansion of electoral democracy. So that was the binding force, right? And you know, going up against Najib and all of that. So how do you contend with the fact that Zahid Hamidi, who had a string of corruption charges, became deputy prime minister, and then there was the DNAA, and then Najib got a discount on his sentence?
I think this is probably the most important question, because it is important to, yes, I do not at all not acknowledge what you have said, but it is also important to acknowledge that Pakatan Harappan did not have enough support to go into government. I think we all remember, you know, when Muhyiddin was going in the palace and Anwar was leaving the palace and everybody's like, oh my God, what's happening? What's happening? Is BN going to join us? Is BN going to join us? Everybody wanted BN to choose us. Okay, at that time, we were desperate. I'm not talking about the political leaders. I'm not talking about Anwar Ibrahim. I'm talking about the people on the ground. Look at the amount of retweets when Anwar is leaving the palace and smiling. People are like, oh my God, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. People wanted it. And when you don't come into power yourself and you have to share your power with someone who, you know, has 30 seats, which is a huge amount of seats. If they pull away from us, you know, we won't have enough sufficient support. How do you find out what you can work on with together despite having 60 years of war fighting each other? How do you find the common things that you agree to work on together? Or do you just let the government go? Okay, if we don't work with BN, then Muhyiddin becomes the prime minister and we become an accountable opposition, which is not bad, which is totally fine. But as an accountable opposition, people are going to do what they want. Like I said, power goes to those who win politically. So if we take the power and we take BN along with us, it will come along with so much of baggages. Taking BN along with us is difficult. I have struggled with this personally myself so much. You know, since 2014, I'm trying to fight this. And now I have to, you know, accept that this is the political reality on the ground. So can we find our shared common things that we want to do with BN? Yes, it's very easy to focus on the differences. BN doesn't want this, we want this. BN doesn't want this, we want this. But in the end, if the unity government has nothing to deliver at the end of its 5 years, how can we show that Pakatan Harapan being in cabinet makes a difference? You know, finding that common space also means that we will have to let go some things at a time. So the first thing is, I feel we need to acknowledge the gap. What do we want and where are we right now? And what's the gap? Is the gap because these political parties, we don't have enough seats in parliament to pass a certain thing? Then okay, we have to be patient because politics is not a 2-year process. Politics is a 100-year process. You know, Kit Siang has been fighting for a better Malaysia his whole life. And you know what he told me? Even in my lifetime, I may not be able to change what's going on. But if we stop trying, then no one will try. You know, so acknowledging the gap. The second thing is understanding the system. How do you make the changes? The bill goes to parliament, okay? You want a reform, we put the bill in parliament. But if the bill doesn't pass, the government looks bad. And as politicians, we cannot look bad, okay? The government needs to deliver with confidence. So how do we win support for a certain bill? And it means that we may not get everything that we want in the bill, but we need to build consensus. It's not about saying, oh, BN doesn't want this, so we cannot do this. It's not about that. BN wins some, but we also need to win some. Where is our reforms that we are winning, you know? We need to build consensus. Okay, why are you against this? Tell me. When we have this conversation, when we understand why they don't want certain things, only then we can persuade them. I think the most important point is to focus on what you can control. So what is in my hands, for example, as a grassroots leader, as someone who has a vote in the DAP State Committee, as someone who has vote in the DAP Central Executive Committee, these are things in my control. My vote as a grassroots member matters because I get to pick the party leadership. So this is in my control. And when my party leaders do not push the ideology that I feel that they should push, then I will not give them my vote. I will vote for the people who I think should be, you know, in the party position. So it's very important that good people join political party. If not, who will vote for these leaders? It's so, so, so important to maintain a long-term perspective and seek inspiration from people who share the same goals with you. And like I said, politics is not about what happens in the next 3 years. I'm not in this to be a councillor for the next 2 years and then this is over. I'm in this for the long run. I'm in this till maybe I'm 50 until I decide to retire for the next 25 years. But when I leave, when I retire at 50, then is the next generation ready to take on? It's also my responsibility that I continue attracting young talent to join DAP because we need a renewal. You know, it's a long-term game. It's a game that will go on for the next 150 years. And we cannot just be disheartened by two or three things and decide to give up. For, you know, evil to prevail, the good just has to do nothing.
With that in mind, what are your big picture plans? What are you hoping to achieve in politics?
So alongside being a counsellor, mm-hmm. I have co-founded a think tank together with Rajiv. It's called Social Democracy Malaysia. We are working with all leaders across the DAP who, you know, have a socially democratic ideology and principle, which do exist, by the way. You know, we do have a political education bureau that teaches us that this is our ideology for the party. This is what we stand for. This is where we fall in all our economic principles and policies as well. And through this think tank, we're focusing on three things: climate change, democracy and governance, as well as urban development, so public transport and housing as well. And we have our first two papers up, which you can search in our website, sogdem.my. It's up. The first one is about the gap of our public transport in the Klang Valley. So we do benchmarking against the first world cities to see where we stand, what we are lacking, and how to get to the first world benchmarking. And the second, the very significantly low uptake in our Malaysian carbon market. How do we boost that? So these are things that I will continue doing and engaging my MPs from time to time, you know, in the parliament as well as the state government to push the policy advocacies, these progressive policies that we believe in. Put it on paper, write it, tell them how much it's going to cost. There is a vision, there's a direction, and it's okay that if in this term I don't fulfill my vision, but I will keep trying for the next 20 years until somebody will listen.
And a final word from you before we wrap, please.
I think social democracy is the way forward. Capitalism will continue to leave the lower class and the B40 people, you know, in a significantly difficult positions. Even if they wanted to come out of the class struggle, it'll be so difficult for them to come out from the class struggle. Social democracy, we are not capping on capitalism, but we are just equitably distributing the wealth from capitalism. And this is the way forward. There is no centre. Centre-left is the centre, in my opinion. And this is why it's important that we embrace social democracy.
Kusha, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome.
That was Kushalini Mahendran from the DAP, a local councillor of MBPJ. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.